everybody. I am Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show on Civic Media. You can always join the conversation. Talk or text 844-967-2789. Lots of interesting stuff happening since I was last with you all live, which was nearly a week ago. It was last Thursday. I've been out of town. More on that in a moment. But as you may be aware, it's Pride Month, and there was this little bit in the Journal Sentinel today about this small suburb of Milwaukee, Greenfield, the city of Greenfield, canceling their Pride event. I was curious what, pray tell, would cause someone to cancel a Pride event. Was some massive headliner not going to show up and you didn't want really disappointed people on your hands? Was there inclement weather of some stripe such that you didn't want people, you know, risking life and limb to be out at a Pride celebration? No, turns out none of the above for the city of Greenfield. But according to the mayor of the city of Greenfield, it's because things like Pride and rainbows have taken on, quote, deep divisive political overtones, end quote, and that sometimes these things can, quote, turn into physical altercations, end quote. Apparently there were safety concerns. No specific mention of any threat or anything. And when it comes to this, like, Pride event, it wasn't really an event. It's basically the Greenfield Health Department. Few folks from the Greenfield Health Department show up at their farmer's market with some, like, fun games, you know, like cornhole, etc., and they take a group photo. That's Greenfield's big, huge Pride event that needed to be canceled because apparently there was going to be physical altercations. I mean, what? What are we talking about? This seems so ridiculous. And yes, another elected individual who is out and proud was in a physical altercation at Mayfair Mall. Apparently that was referred to by the mayor, but really? I just don't get it. Apparently now you can't even talk about the month of Pride or the fact that there are different people in Greenfield, lest someone be moved to violence. And here's my point, folks. If this is the logic that now applies to these sorts of things, right, then women should just stay home. And if we do go out, you know, be covered and head, you know, from head to toe. Because by the mayor of Greenfield's logic, the mere presence of a woman might incite a man to violent attack. Because, you know, just seeing someone that maybe has a different take than you is going to incite violence against those folks. I just don't understand this. If this is true because someone else might commit a ridiculous crime with no excuse means that we can't gather together anymore, boy, then we should just pack it in. You know what I'm saying? It's really, really a moment of leadership for the mayor of Greenfield, wasn't it? Yes, we will stand with those in our community who are LGBTQIA+, except we will not take a group photo at the farmer's market this past Saturday. It tells you where we are, right? I mean, if you've got thoughts on it, 844-967-2789. Like, is the mayor of Greenfield, like, that spooked that someone might call him woke? Is Greenfield that Republican now or that Trumpy? I didn't know that. That's interesting. But yeah, that one kind of broke my heart. I just don't understand that. And this, of course, was happening in the midst of all of these federal court rulings that have been dropping like flies in the month of June, striking down all these trans care bans that Republican-controlled states can't enact quickly enough while more mass shootings kill more children. So the most recent one just dropped yesterday, and then it was, I think, the day after we spoke last, the 16th, so just last Friday, I believe, that the other most recent decision dropped. So the one that came down today is from Arkansas, and the one on Friday is from Indiana. And again, I need to remind all of us that very much at the very beginning of June, a huge decision came down from a federal court in Florida, also striking down the trans care ban there. And I'm using the word striking down liberally. Most of these are requests for injunction that prevent enforcement of the bans. But, you know, for common parlance, striking down. The language in these decisions is just remarkable. And I want to point out that one of these decisions, the one that came down just this past Friday, was issued by a Trump-appointed judge. And while its language is more sort of technical and dry and very geeky, it's pretty plain, too. And the other two decisions are downright calls to arms, if you will. Perhaps a bad expression, but very much a clarion called for reasonableness and a return to science. And one actually expressly takes up that these arguments that are being made by the GOP not only don't have basis in any kind of scientific fact, but that they're based on a particularized view of a religion. And therefore, because you might believe differently religiously doesn't mean that you get to start limiting my rights, particularly when the differentiation between what rights I have and what rights you have is my gender identity, my sex. That does not bode well under our constitutional system, which seems to be something that many GOP-controlled states, in their zest to tell others what to do in their private lives, you know, decided to just ignore the Constitution. And they even go so far as to now be brushing up against some of the decisions that they were so excited about before. Like the cake baker doesn't have to bake a cake for a gay couple because that is requiring him to speak in a certain way, and that's a violation of the First Amendment. Well, preventing people from speaking in certain circumstances is also unconstitutional if being done by the government. And here, most of these trans care bans include language that prohibits physicians from even providing any sort of information or referrals to other doctors that could provide the care to it out of state. Well, we've got some First Amendment problems there. So one of the things that really jumps out most for me when I read these decisions is how the courts choose to engage with the, and I'm doing air quotes here, everyone, you can't see me, but feel them, how the court chooses to address the various, air quotes here, experts that each side puts on to help support their arguments. And in a nutshell, in federal court, you don't just declare yourself an expert on some such, and then the federal court will allow your testimony to become part of the evidence of a case. You actually have to demonstrate expertise in the area that you are going to be testifying about in order to present your opinions to be considered by a jury eventually as evidence. And really, the most recent case, which just came down yesterday, I think is quite a study in what we're dealing with here, right? It's just such, it's a wonderful summary of the fact that these are not co-equal arguments. And the two arguments here are, should families of children who have a gender identity different than that assigned at their birth be able to, and conference with their physician and their religious or faith leader, determine what medical care is appropriate for their son or daughter. And these bans say, no, you don't get to do that. We get to do that. And the reason why is that the state is so worried about the health of its young people. That's the premise. That's why they get to regulate. Government can't just regulate to regulate. You have to have an explicit government purpose. And the trans care bans all come under this stated purpose of protecting children. We want to make sure that medical care that children get has been sufficiently supported by studies and it's not going to harm them. That's the core of the argument, because you can't get up and say, well, because my God tells me it's bad. That doesn't work, because we still try to engage in this ever eroded fiction that we're supposed to be a secular democracy. So you can't outright say it's because my God tells me so. So we're now faced with the assertion by the state that they can ban trans care for people under the age of 18 because they're very much worried about their health. Now, here's where we get into some legal weeds, but please stick with me. Once government has stated its purpose of the legislation, that purpose is given deference, or it's more easily accepted by a court. If the court is reviewing that purpose under a rational basis review, that's the magic words, rational basis. And rational basis basically means if the government can come up with anything that sounds even moderately reasonable, we're just going to presume that the law is constitutional and not set it aside. All other legal problems aside. But, if the court engages in what is called strict scrutiny, it means that they're really going to see if that is a legitimate government interest. They're going to actually probe the veracity of that stated purpose. And they're going to require that that stated purpose is being served in the most narrowly tailored way. And the court does this when the rule or law that we're talking about impacts a protected class, meaning it's different rules for different people based upon your what? Your sex. So I'm going to break down the rest of this expert analysis when we get back. I am Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the very wonky Maggie Dawn Show here on Civic Media. Keep it locked in. I'm going to tell you where we should end up on these most important constitutional questions of our time. Hey, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn, and you are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show on Civic Media. You can download the Civic Media app and listen without fail every time crystal clear. You can get the Civic Media app anywhere you find your favorite applications. Always, you can join us 844-967-2789. Boy, the brain, a little mushy today, Evan. That's what happens. I'm away from the studio for just a couple days, and I can't even remember the dial-in number anymore. You can always call or text. The cool thing about the app, too, that I'll say is once you've got it downloaded and you open it up and you've got your home station selected, you can listen with one touch, and you can also call or text the station with one touch, so you don't even need the number anymore, which I think is super cool.
We can't yet reply to them in-app. It'll come. The time will come, and we'll be able to talk all night long. But for now,
I love it.
See what you're saying.
We'll literally be in the listener's head. So I was sharing with you how some of the constitutional analysis goes for these trans care bans. And we were at the point where we had talked about and set the stage that the state has to articulate an interest, and that when the law is being applied differently or it involves a protected classification, the law will get strict scrutiny, which means you have to really show evidence of a true and compelling government interest. And that interest have to be served in a very narrow way by whatever the law or regulation that has been put in place is doing. So we have strict scrutiny that requires compelling governmental interests and that it be served narrowly by the law. And that strict scrutiny will get triggered when the law is differentiating on the basis of sex or gender, national origin, race. Those are all the protected classifications. And here, all three of these courts that have heard challenges to these bans have found that, yes, indeed, we are talking about sex, because you can't ban transgender care with words in English without talking about sex or your gender that is assigned at birth, right? You can't ban the thing that you want to ban without differentiating amongst people based upon their sex. So the court in the most recent case, and this is the one coming out of Arkansas, just dropped yesterday. The court in this case takes the time to go through every single one of the testifying experts that were presented to the court during 8 days of testimony in the hearing that the court had over this preliminary injunction. And every single one of them, and effectively assesses the credibility of each expert in turn. It's good, juicy stuff, because the court is in effect weighing in on the merits of this argument that this law is to protect kids, right? That's what everybody keeps saying. So if you want to nerd out in the 80-page decision with me, the expert-by-expert decision out of Arkansas just yesterday begins on page 52. They start with the plaintiff's experts, or the experts that were testifying on behalf of those challenging the ban. So they support trans care for kids, okay? And by the way, there's some great factual findings in this. Again, one that affirms that the WPATH, the Worldwide Professional Standards for Trans Healthcare, Association for Trans Healthcare, does not recommend that there be any surgical interventions before the age of 18. And that is generally the practice, and it's the accepted practice, the AMA, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I just want to get that clear. What we're talking about is hormone blockers. There's a whole array of things. The first expert, and if you're on the line, stay on the line. If I don't get to you this segment, I will bring you in next. First expert from the plaintiffs, yeah, he went to the Yale School of Medicine, completed his residency in UCLA, has literally treated thousands of transgendered youth in an over 30-year career. He's testified to the UN. I mean, it goes on and on. Yeah. Court concludes that that expert is credible. Next one, Medical College of Georgia, residency at UNC. She's a professor of pediatrics at Duke University. She's treated approximately 600 adolescent patients with gender dysphoria. She's credible. Next one, Yale. So the common thread amongst all the experts in support of those fighting to maintain the most basic rights that parents and children have, which is to determine healthcare for the child. And of course, as a legal matter, kids can't have surgeries without parental consent. I need to point that out. We seem to have forgotten that. The court concludes thusly, plaintiffs' experts' extensive experience, their testimony in court, and their demeanor and responsiveness to questions asked by both sides and the court show that all four of plaintiffs' expert witnesses have deep knowledge of the specific subject matter of their testimony and were fully qualified to provide the opinion testimony they offered. They have provided testimony relevant and reliable to the core issues in this case. I'm not going to bore you with all of the details of all of the other patient experts, but I will just say this. The court does not credit these opinions because it finds that the evidence showed that decades of clinical experience, in addition to a body of scientific research, demonstrate the effectiveness of these treatments. For the same reason, the court finds that the treatments banned by Act 626 are not. Yeah, that's it in a nutshell. I'll be back with more in a moment. If you are on the line, stay on the line. I will be getting to you next. And you, Lou, from Cudahy, will be up first. I am Maggie Dawn. Thank you for listening. Keep it locked. This is the Maggie Dawn Show on Civic Media.
And as her folks drive away, her dad yells, check the oil. Mom stares out.
Welcome back. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show. Before the break, I was explaining a little bit how constitutionality reviews work. And we were talking about the expert testimony that had been presented in one of the three federal cases that have rejected trans care bans. And the fact that basically the court concluded that all of the experts that testified in support of not trying to prohibit one class of people from making the decisions that they and their parents, whose consent is legally required if they're under 18, to select their own medical care, okay? State preventing one class of persons from doing that. That those experts presented by the people that say the state shouldn't be doing that, they were all credible, and not a single one of these states' experts did the court ultimately find not just to be credible, but that their testimony was rooted in science. The expert that came the closest, and I just want to share these little tidbits, and then we're going to go right to the phones. The expert that came the closest, and the court did explicitly say that they found this gentleman to be credible, was utterly lacking in having any relevant knowledge about the particular question before the court. The court summarized his testimony thusly. He testified that doctors who provide gender-affirming medical care to adolescents with gender dysphoria actually encourage the patients to identify as transgender and provide hormones immediately without assessing patients and addressing other mental health conditions or informing parents and their parents of the, or informing patients and their parents of the risks and limitations of the evidence regarding treatments. That was his testimony. And here's what the court said about it. He offered no evidence that treatment was being provided this way in Arkansas or anywhere in the United States. He conceded that he has no knowledge of how most gender clinics provide care and thus does not know how common it is for care to be provided in the way he described. He further does not know how care is provided by doctors in Arkansas. While the court found Dr. Levine to be a very credible witness who struggles with the conflict between his scientific understanding for the need for transgender care and his faith. And on the other three experts, the court concluded this way. It is clear from listening to the testimony that Professor Mark, I can't say this guy's name, Regneris, Dr. Paul Hruz, and Dr. Lappert were testifying more from a religious doctrinal standpoint rather than the standard required of experts in federal court. Yeah. Okay. But it's about kids. I just don't buy it. Lou from Cudahy, what are your thoughts, friend?
Well, this is about abolishing the family. When you abolish the family, you abolish the nation, because the family is the strength of the nation. And number two, separate the young people from their families, from their parents. That's super important to the woke left. It's not done by a group of people who care about America. They care about their political agenda, and they couldn't care less about these young people. Imagine 13, 14, 15-year-old kids, 16-year-old, getting their bodies mutilated in the name of your ideology. Is that something noble?
Well, first of all, as I stated earlier, people under the age of 18 are not recommended under any version of the applicable health guidance that is provided on trans care to have any surgical interventions done, Lou. So that's not true. So we've eliminated that. You said the woke left wants to separate families. How does what we're talking about here, which is letting families choose for themselves what their child's medical care should be, how is that separating families, Lou?
That you intervene by eliminating the nuclear family, mother, father, and children. You want a family of both same-sex
parents. How does permitting trans care for children separating or breaking up a nuclear family? It's a mother and father deciding what they want the care for their child to be. What does that have to do with the nuclear family?
Except the family as we know it to be in favor of a new family.
As who knows it to be, Lou? As who knows it to be?
Destruction of the family. Destruction of the family is
whose definition of family, Lou? I'm asking you. Who gets to define what a family is? You? Your Bible?
Well, the families who are involved in this, who see their children going down this path where they get surgery and that kind of thing, and find themselves making a mistake.
I just explained to you that surgery is not part of any of the accepted guidances. So that is a falsehood that people are using to scare people. So that is not a true statement. If you continue to repeat that not fact, that untrue statement, I'm going to have to drop you from the call. I asked you a question, Lou. Who gets to define what a family is?
I think society should.
Okay, well, society is doing that, isn't it? And if society has deemed families that differ from your definition, Lou, and that's acceptable to folks in society, then why isn't that okay?
Bill, why should the tyranny of the minority get to define for the rest of the country what
tyranny of the
is?
Minority? How is saying that society should decide, not tyranny of the majority? If there's a majority of white people in this country, do they get to decide that black folks have less rights simply because there's more of them?
I will not engage in a racist conversation like that. White people.
I'm just asking you to understand the implications of what you're saying, Lou, because if we get to say that this person, because of their gender identity, gets certain rights, but this person doesn't, that is not a far jump to understand that we made equally arbitrary distinctions between people based on race just a few decades ago, sir. So who defines what family it is? Because we've agreed it can't be society, because we can't rule by tyranny of the minority or the majority. So who decides what family counts?
This country, and it hurts this country. It's part of the agenda to...
I'm going to ask you one more time to answer the question, Lou, and that is who defines the family? If you don't answer it, I'm going to have to drop you.
You can drop me.
Thank you. Super. I love it when I win arguments that way. Can't answer the question because... It's a definition of family according to a biblical or religious-based understanding of family. I don't know how we get away from this. The folks that have had differing gender identities have existed since the beginning of human history.
Well, the premise of the argument involves ignoring the premise of the argument, right? That families getting to decide how their families are treated, you know, what sort of treatment that their families seek, let alone the fact that, like you said, none of the medical, you know, nomenclature suggests that people under 18 receive such radical treatment anyways. So it's besides the point.
Correct. Well, I see another one of my favorite conservatives on the line. We'll give him a shot at it. Go ahead, CJ. You're on the Maggie Dawn Show.
Well, I appreciate Lou making an effort. God bless him. You know, unfortunately, the way you describe it, Maggie, and I appreciate you taking my call. Unfortunately, we found out a lot of things during COVID.
And so we're not going to talk about COVID when we're talking about trans care for kids. I want you to stick on the topic, which is trans care for kids. We're not going to go down some rabbit hole about COVID.
Well, we found this mission by many different groups through the school system, through the terminology, through the definitions. You and your party preach tolerance, but you seem to be the most intolerant.
Because okay, so now we're going to have a random tangent about cancel culture. Yeah. So, listen, I just wanted to have a real basic conversation because I don't really understand how how states think that this particular sort of regulation is constitutional. And I don't know how conservatives can defend it other than to say, this is my God and this is what I believe. That's what I'm trying to understand here, CJ. Can you speak to that?
No, it's more than that. It's that the agenda has been discovered.
Evan,
we found out during the shutdown.
Yeah, done. I'm sorry, CJ. I can't do the like every random thing, every like GOP talking point that pops into your head will somehow fit into this box. It just doesn't. I'm going to go to Annie from Watertown. You're on the Maggie Dawn Show. What say you, Annie?
It's just sort of like, well, who is he talking to? Who is he hanging out with? Because when you say society, my mom had a great quote. I said, I really don't like living here in Watertown, whatever. And she just sort of said, well, I don't know. I don't go to bars and stuff, so I probably hang out with different people.
Oh.
Yeah, it's who you hang out with to where you think you're living in with, you know, I mean, what people's opinions are and what kind of world you're living in, even in a small, tiny little subset of life as, you know, Watertown. But I always think of her saying that.
Oh, that's great. That's one to grow on. Like, surround yourself with good people who love and accept others and want to have genuine conversations, and like stuff will get better. I'm all for it, Annie. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks for the call. Jim from Appleton, what say you this fine afternoon on the Maggie Dawn Show?
Well, hello, Maggie. I'm glad to talk with you. I happen to be the proud father of a girl that refers to herself as queer. Because of that, I have personal relationships with more than a few people that are attempting to transgender. One of them started at the age of 17. He made it, I'm going to say he started as a she, but until the age of 38 before they finally allowed the surgery. It is a long process.
Yeah. And it's painful.
Teenager is getting the surgery. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. He didn't have any fun with his process.
Yeah.
But it is attainable. And oh, my God, is he happy now that he had his surgery? I also know another pair that are born boy girl and they both want to transgender to the other side, and they've been waiting 12 years and apparently red flags keep popping up in their meetings with psychologists, so they can't.
Yeah, and how hard that is, and heartbreaking. Yeah, thanks so much for the call, Jim. I really appreciate it. By the way, Jim, if you're still listening, the term is they are attempting to do a surgical transition, or they are looking to surgically transition. Different trans folks, I understand it, consider themselves transitioned maybe when they start dressing behaving in the other gender that they identify.
That's right. Not everybody seeks these really transformative surgical procedures. And as Jim said, it can take decades.
Yep. I can't not mention this. In the decision that came out of Florida, Judge Hinkle took pains to call out the names that people have called these folks. And when people start talking about this in terms of the Bible and their God and all these things, I start to get worried, right? Because if you believe that that is a sin and is evil and is leading to the destruction of our country and all this crazy nonsense, it becomes not so hard to engage in name calling, which makes it not so hard to engage in intimidation, which makes it not so hard to isolate and segregate and treat differently, which makes it not so hard to hurt and physically attack, which makes it not so hard to kill. When I come back, I'm going to share that language from that Florida decision. We're going to take the rest of your calls. I see you, Jim and Mark. You are there. We will get to you. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show. Keep it locked in. We're going deep into the law here, folks. Hope Hope you're enjoying. Please keep us tuned in, and you can always get the app at the Civic Media app. Feel free to join us, 844-967-2789. I promised you a small quote from the Florida decision, which came down on, I believe it was June 6th, I believe. So we had a decision on June 6th, 16th, and the 20th yesterday, all finding these trans care bans unconstitutional. Here's what the judge from Florida had to say. This is a politically fraught area. There has long been and still is substantial bigotry directed at transgender individuals. Common experience confirms this, as does a Florida legislator's remarkable reference to transgender witnesses at a committee hearing as mutants and demons. And even when not based on bigotry, there are those who incorrectly but sincerely believe that gender identity is not real, but instead just a choice. This is, as noted above, the elephant in the room. Where there is bigotry, there are usually, one hopes, always, opponents of bigotry. It is hardly surprising that doctors who understand that transgender identity can be real, not made up, doctors who are willing to provide supportive and appropriate medical care, oppose anti-transgender bigotry. I couldn't have said it any better myself, Judge Hinkle. My friend Jim from Appleton, welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show.
We already took you, Jim.
Yep.
Jim, how are you?
We already took Jim's call. I was about to say, we've spoken to Jim.
Oh, we did, but you're still there hanging on. That's so nice. Thank you, Jim. Then we'll go to my friend Mark from the SAC. Mark, how you doing?
We're doing great. And for your first segment there, I couldn't help but think a quote of 1979. Someday we'll find it, the Rainbow Connection, the lovers, the dreamers, and me. Of course, that's from the Muppet movie, the Rainbow Connection. And this traces back, I mean, for as far as CJ and Lou, that I just remembered a quote that I saw, you know, going through the various history stuff I was reading. Apparently George Kaelin, you know, famous artist that painted Indian people, or Native American people, that he found it disgusting that the Native American people accepted people that, you know, that dressed in, behaved in outside of their gender. He found that absolutely disgusting. So we run into the other cultures have accepted people like that, and that apparently in a lot of in Western society, because, you know, we apparently have not made that leap yet in some extent, and we need to make that leap. I mean, it does not hurt me at all that there are people out there that are trans, that are gay, that it doesn't affect me at all. I mean, personally, I mean,
one of the things, Mark, I wish, thanks so much for listening. And I really always appreciate you calling in, Mark. Continue on your cancer recovery. One of the things that always seemed so challenging for me is that if it's such a problem for people, like, just don't engage with the issue, right? Like, it has nothing to do with your everyday life. If you choose to live in a bubble, you don't ever interact with people that are different from you. Like, woo-ha, you can do that in the United States. It's called Utah. Please don't email the show if you're from Utah and I just offended you. Bad joke. But one of the places that I want to get to with some of these discussions, and why I think folks will draw analogies to what used to be said about race. Race used to be keeping the races separate, and slavery was defended on biblical grounds and then scientific ones. That was nonsense. And I think the reason that I sometimes draw those comparisons and want to engage in those discussions is because just as back then, when people opposed slavery and stood for the innate dignity of every human being, we need folks to stand up and not just understand that if that's not what their religious practice is, that that's fine and you can keep to yourself, but that all of the others of us that believe that human beings are entitled to some basic levels of respect and dignity and a lack of interference from the government, particularly when their choices are affecting only their lives, that we need to actually feel like it matters to us, that it does matter to us, that that all of these things that deal with our innate human dignity and these fundamental, most private, most intimate decisions, who we are, who we want to spend our lives with, who we want to love, how we want to raise our children, right? Those most human need for privacy and dignity, that should be essential to all of us, especially conservatives who want the right to practice their religion without interference from the state. I agree, amen, no pun intended, but you have to be consistent with that. That those that don't believe should have their rights respected as well. If you say the government incurs way too far into the corporate life of America, what about into our most private places, into our bodies, into our family units? Somehow that principle doesn't apply there because your God tells you something else. That doesn't work here. That's not what we're supposed to be about. I don't get to press my religion on you, and you do not get to press your religion on me or my body or my family or my medical care. I don't know how more dangerous it can get than when an elected official feels like it is okay to refer to any group of human beings on this planet as mutants, demons, and imps. That courtesy of representative GOP lawmaker Webster Barnaby of Florida. No one, least of which an elected official, should ever be calling another human being a mutant, imp, or demon. That is a point of shame. So I say, I think we can bridge the gap between conservatives and liberals on this issue. We can say that we stand for human dignity and the right to pursue our own faith beliefs without interference from the state. And so, everyone should have access to trans care. I'm Maggie Dawn. This has been an episode of The Maggie Dawn Show here on Civic Media. Come back tomorrow. We're going to be hitting some of the more saucier bits of the news cycle this week. My friend Evan dropping some sounds for you as well, because it'll be Thursday Talkback. I'm Maggie Dawn. Tune in tomorrow on Civic Media. Go grab that app, because we want to know if you're listening. And my thanks to my friend Evan. As always, a good, fun time. Thanks, everybody.